This is Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder?
Hi, good day, good evening, it's evening here. Good morning, good day. I'm sorry, I've never intro'd your podcast before. I'm not Molly, my name is John. I'm joined today by Molly Stillman, recent author of The Life and Times of Millard Fillmore, the definitive biographical account of our nation's 13th president. Molly, great to have you here today.
Thank you.
So you told me, 11 minutes before we were recording this that I was supposed to be interviewing you. I did not understand. I knew we were going to do a podcast. I did not understand that I was supposed to have questions for you. So I spent the... Go ahead.
No. Okay. So I just would like to this is not a marriage squabble. However, we did have this conversation. This may be a great example of selective hearing.
Well, no. I thought what this was going to be was that you were going to be asking me what it's like to be married to such a famous person. Or, you know, what are the historical facts that I quibbled with in the book?
Yes.
I guess we can get to some of those.
We can.
So how I feel about how I was portrayed in the book.
Got it.
I thought that's what this
in the life of and times of Millard Fillmore.
Okay. So anyway, my point initially was that 11 minutes of preparing for this show, I spent the entire 11 minutes trying to decide which president I wanted to use for that bit.
Oh, okay.
So can I tell you why I landed on Millard Fillmore?
Okay, please.
Well, all right. So here's who I considered. Millard Fillmore was one. Chester A. Arthur, because he had really sick mutton chops.
Ooh, I do love a mutton chop. Can we bring those back instead of mullets?
I don't know. I would probably advise against it.
Okay.
I considered Franklin Pierce because I wanted somebody obscure, but that's almost too obscure. Like, yeah. I don't even know anything about Franklin Pierce.
And you know a lot about all presidents.
And then I've already forgotten now. Who was the other person? Oh, Martin Van Buren was the other person.
Martin Van Buren.
Yes.
I would have said Polk would have been a good one.
That was like too cliche for me. The one president that went to Carolina.
Okay.
But Martin Van Buren, the first like non-English president. He was Dutch. Interesting, right? But here's why I picked Millard Fillmore. Because he looks like he could be the great-grandfather of Alec Baldwin.
Interesting.
Look him up. Google image him right now.
Okay.
I want to see your face
everyone
when you see a picture of Millard Fillmore.
Millard Fillmore, 13th U.S. president. And
tell me that is not the great-grandfather of Alec Baldwin.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Is this a comparison that... Oh, wait. No, look. On Google Images, there's a Reddit.
There you go.
Hollywood ever needed someone to play Millard Fillmore,
they won't.
They would choose. How do you know that Hollywood doesn't want to make
a movie? Alec Baldwin would be the one who assassinates Millard Fillmore in the biopic.
Is that too soon?
Millard Fillmore was not assassinated, but in this film, he will be.
Too soon.
Anyway, so about your book. At the time we're having this conversation, the book will be coming out tomorrow.
Yes. And when this airs.
When this airs, it will have come out yesterday.
Yes.
So talk about that. No. Serious question about the book.
Okay. Serious question.
Why did you spend so much time talking about former boyfriends?
Because you told me to. Yeah,
it was my idea. The boyfriend chapter was my idea. However, I wanted it to end a little bit differently. I wanted the last line of the chapter to simply say, needless to say, the bar was very low when I met John.
And
you took it a different direction.
Yes. And I refused to say that. So there is an entire chapter in my book that is entitled The Boyfriend Chapter. And a little backstory as to why John wanted me to write this chapter so much is because this chapter was not in the plan for the initial manuscript. And you're like, why is there a title? Or why is there a chapter in your memoir just titled The Boyfriend Chapter when the book is about the death of my mother and me going into debt? Like, why is there an entire chapter dedicated to the slew of very high quality boyfriends that I had at one point in my life.
My very favorite line in the entire book is in that chapter. Now, I should say, I haven't read the book, but I did ask ChatGPT for a summary of it, so I have the gist.
No, but, he's read ahead. It. But it really what birthed out of that chapter was I was working on a different chapter when I was writing the manuscript. And one night you and I were sitting, I don't know if it was in the living room or just before we were going to bed, and we were talking through my past relationships. And you and I basically started doing bits about how bad my past boyfriends were, just like comically, and how it started very young in kindergarten and went, how I have a boyfriend who is an ex-boyfriend who is in jail for murder. Yeah, and there's
that part is where my favorite line.
Yeah, there's
from.
There's a lot. Yeah, yeah, that doesn't like spoil the line.
You can read about it in the book.
You can. And so he just was laughing so hard. And he was like, you have to just make that into a chapter. And I was like, but I don't know if I can fit this in. And in the end, I did. And it is your favorite chapter in the entire book.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. So what's different about the book in its final form compared to the initial vision that you had? Because it changed.
It did.
Like the base, I guess, is still there.
Yeah.
But it's... I feel like we're covering much more of your life in the final version than was the initial idea.
Yeah, the initial idea was really just to tell the debt story and, you know, squandering $250,000 and then ending up tens of thousands of dollars in debt. And initially when I was, but then I think as I began to actually work on the outline and all of that, then it turned into much more of a, okay, I've really got to tell a deeper story here to make the debt story not make sense. That's not right. But more do it justice. If that, does that make sense? Yeah. And so I think as I began to work on the outline, I realized that more of that backstory needed to be included than I think originally thought. But then it was interesting because when I started putting together the proposal initially, there were people who were telling me like, oh, you should just write a financial book. Should I write a financial book?
I would probably advise against that as
Thank
well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just like the Millard Fillmore biopic, I would probably advise against you writing a financial book.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I remember when I had a call with somebody who was like, I think I, you know, I like your proposal, but I think you actually just need to write a financial book. And I remember thinking like, that is a terrible idea. No, you do not want me writing a financial book. There's a reason that I'm married to you, yeah. A financial advisor.
I mean, you can see how they would have maybe made that leap.
Maybe.
From the proposal. They maybe. Clearly did not know you.
Yes.
And your lack of ability to do math with or without a calculator, really.
Yeah.
You don't really even know what buttons to push on the calculator to get to the answer.
And don't ask me to make an Excel spreadsheet with formulas and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be a hard no. The other day I had to ask you how to like sort something in Excel just like by name. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how to do this.
Yeah, I was embarrassed for you. Well, what kinds of things do you think you'll do now that the book is out to make up for all the neglecting of me that you have done for the last several months to years?
You feel neglected?
I don't
wow.
feel neglected.
Okay. I was going to say, this really did turn into a marriage therapy session. Yeah. Just kidding.
So when the book is released, as you like to say, out in the world. I'm not going to say that.
No, you're not.
That sounds like something you'd say.
But it does.
Now what?
Now what? Don't ask me when I'm writing a second one. That's that one I've already gotten and I've been like, let me get through.
Okay, let me just delete a question from my list here. When are you writing a second book? Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
As far as now what, I mean, I think the thing I'm most looking forward to is hearing the stories of people who are reading it. Just, I mean, even just initially, the people who have gotten advanced copies or people who are like professional book reviewers, which I learned that that's a thing where people can like that's their job is they review books.
How do you get paid to be a professional book reviewer?
I don't know.
But is this like for a publication? Review books for a
well, I mean, like I got the Publisher's Weekly review. So like that makes sense because that's a publication.
Is that like Publisher's Weekly? Is that a weekly publication or is that
yes.
like W-E-A-K-L-Y? Like they review it just, in very weak fashion. Publishers Weekly.
It is the former.
Weekly.
Okay. It is the former. And so, yeah, that obviously makes sense. But as far as, and maybe they're not paid. Maybe they just have like blogs or things like that where they review books. In any event, that's been really interesting to see, to just hear the feedback from people initially who have read it that don't know me. Cause it's one thing when like my friends have read it and give good feedback, and I don't think they're lying, but it's just another thing to hear from somebody who doesn't know me.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I was going to ask is, do you now actually believe that it is in fact a good book now that you've gotten good reviews?
I do.
Because I didn't know if we were going to have to be years into this and you're still like, I don't know, 250,000 copies. I don't know if it's a good book.
No. Well, okay. So here's the thing. And I mean, you can.
That's a lot, right? 250,000.
That would
copies.
Be a lot.
Okay.
I would love to sell 250,000 copies.
Let's do that.
That'd be great. Okay. It would be fantastic. But to your point, you can say, I think you can attest to the fact that I struggle with being proud of something that I have done in that, like, not pride, but like being like, yes, this is a good product that I have created.
Not with dinner.
Okay.
You can be really proud of culinary exploits.
Because they're good.
See? You're confident in this. Other things, not so much.
Yes. But I think the thing I was thinking about the other day is like, this is a thing that I have worked on for so long and have had so many other people look at it, and you know, it's been edited and I've sat with it. And this was something that was interesting, that was advice that was given to me years ago when I first thought about writing a book. And somebody said, if you go the traditional publishing route, which I did, it's a really long process. I mean, I signed my book contract 2 years ago, but then obviously I was working on it even longer than that. And they're like, so by the time you get to that, not finish line, but get to that publication date, which when this airs was yesterday and on, because you know, writing a book is really a marathon, not a sprint. You have to be so confident in it and not be sick of yourself and your own words. And I can say, I'm not sick of myself. That sounds really weird to say, but I mean, I'm not sick of this book. Like, I'm not over it. I am more excited about it than ever. And I'm just genuinely excited for people to read it.
Yeah. Well, me too.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to see the reviews come in.
Yeah.
Because I know that you need to hear people that aren't your friends be like, yeah, that's a good book.
Yeah.
All right. So we said what my favorite chapter was. What is yours?
That one's up there. Probably The Grotto of Lourdes.
Yeah.
Just because writing it was so fun, because it's a story that has been told in my family ever since it happened. And my dad tells it the best, really. I really wanted him to come in and to tell the story on the audiobook. That unfortunately couldn't happen. But writing out this, I almost think about like, Not that it's a fairy tale or folklore, because that's not it. But you know how stories get, you know, passed down oral tradition in families. And then it was like, I got the opportunity to actually take this story that was like oral tradition for years and actually put
now
it down.
It's been published.
Yes. And put it
no
down on paper.
Back.
And I think the thing that's actually been really surprising about it, And I'm saying all of this because, you know, the people listening, probably at this point, you haven't read the story of The Grotto of Lourdes, but it's a really, really funny story that is also sad, because it's this hilarious story that is on the backdrop of something really hard. But the interesting thing about it is some of the people that read it early said things like, your parents really inspired me to like look at life differently. Or people have said like, your parents could have been walking around like sad sacks, but they were so fun. And so I like that people are able to see that that's who they were. And that was how me and my friends were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I never had to ask you this before for obvious reasons.
Okay.
But you know, you pitched it to several different publishers, a dozen, maybe
14
publishers. Obviously, at least one of them said yes because the book is being published. Mm-hmm. If all 14 had said no, what would you have done? Would you have said, I still have to write this book? I've got to self-publish this?
Yeah. So that was something I had talked with my agent Joy about, because I was, in a lot of ways, I'd actually prepared myself that they were all 14 were going to say no.
Naturally, that's the thing that you would do.
Yes, that is what I would do. Meanwhile, you'd be like, how do I say no to 13 of 14? Like,
no, I wouldn't worry that much. I would just say, I'm not going to work with you. I wouldn't worry about saying no to them. They would understand.
Yeah, they would.
But they weren't good enough for
me. Were. They would. No, I think I would have exhausted a few more options as far as, because, I mean, we started with really the 14 publishers that Joy had a contact with, or, I mean, like, really, like, just logistically speaking, or publishers that she had a personal connection to. And she had said, she was like, if we get no's from all of them, like, we will then branch out to other publishers. So I would have exhausted other options before going the self-publishing route. Not that I am against self-publishing. I just really wanted to do the traditional publishing route for this one. And so, but no, I would have absolutely said that I would have still done it. But I also, I think I'm really glad that I ended up going with the publisher that I ended up going with, because I think the editor that I got made this book, like, without Brigida, it of course would have still been a really good book, but I think she pulled some things out of the story that I would not have necessarily otherwise pulled. I mean, I wrote an entire two additional chapters after I had turned in my manuscript, because she was basically like,
and she kind of made it all fit together.
She really helped me kind of move things around. And it's really interesting because it was, working with an editor was not at all what I initially thought it was going to be. Because when I got that first edit back of the manuscript, it was more just like, she would write paragraphs and she would say, here's what I really like here. Here's what I think you need to change. Like, it was not the redlining that I thought. It was more like her just sharing her thoughts on how to structure the book better and how to rearrange things, or, hey, this chapter is actually three chapters. Like, I think the chapter that the Grotto of Lords originally was in ended up getting broken up into three chapters. So, like, the Grotto of Lords story was a part of a different chapter. And so that was things like that that I just never would have known how to do myself. So
the chapter titles, we knew we're going to be.
Oh, yeah. That great. Was so fun.
But, like, initial early reviews are like, great chapter titles.
Yes, yes. Everybody loves the chapter titles. Yeah. And I did that on purpose because I mean, that's just, it's fun. And I think it's kind of like naming the book. Naming the chapter is like, what is that chapter about? Yeah.
That's what makes it a page turner.
Yeah.
You can't, like, turn to the next, oh, I'll finish this chapter. Well, I have to read.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
With the chapter, the quote to kick it off, like, yeah, you have to keep reading.
Yeah.
Can you name all of the places where this book was written?
Yes.
It wasn't all right here in this room.
It was not all right here in this room.
And could you do it by percentage? Like, what percentage was in here and the other places?
I don't know that I could do percentages. I think it's more of, I know what I wrote where. So I wrote the chapter where my mom dies. Spoiler alert. I don't know if you're aware that my mom died and that I wrote a chapter about it. So, and
well,
then
death was on the cover. Another spoiler alert. She was assassinated by Alec Baldwin.
spoiler alert. My mother was Millard Fillmore.
Really took a turn.
Okay. So that chapter and then the funeral chapter I wrote in the mountains when I went to the mountains by myself. I wrote the death chapter. That was the one where I remember why I had texted you and I was like, I'm going on a hike. And, like, I sent you my pin because I was like, I haven't seen another person for an hour and I was afraid I was going to die. And I was like, if I die, come find my body here.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was on the side of this mountain, like in near Grandfather Mountain by myself for hours. And I pretty much wrote that entire chapter there. And then I was finishing it up and I then hear voices for the first time in hours. I truly had not seen another human being. And I remember going through my head, like, I really wish I had a concealed carry permit right now. Like, what if a bear comes? Like, what do I do? Me, not a gun person. Okay. But in my mind, I'm like, this is what needs to happen. And then I hear voices and these two, maybe three gentlemen walk up. And again, I'm all alone with a laptop on the side of a mountain and they're both packing heat. I was like,
oh, it's a mountain.
I know. But then I was suddenly like, now I'm alone with these two gentlemen who have guns. And so I have never run, walked back to my vehicle a mile and a half faster than that moment. But anyway, so I wrote both of those chapters in the mountains.
We could have ended up calling that the death chapter if you'd been murdered there. Well, this was the site of the death chapter.
Yes, exactly. And then the chapter, where I really go into depth about my mom and dad's childhood and then childhoods and my mom's time in Vietnam, I wrote those at the beach. And then the college debt periods, those chapters I wrote in the bonus room at the Staley's house. And then everything else was kind of sporadic, a coffee shop here, front porch there, yeah. All about.
So is there anything that you look back on and say, you know what? Maybe I should have left that out because maybe that is another book. Or is it all pretty much exactly as you could have in your most ideal situation mapped it out?
I think actually in my most ideal situation, I think it is exactly how it should be. I think the one part that was hard was, 90% of the book takes place from birth to 25. And so the kind of catch up of the last 14 years was more difficult because I didn't want to rush it, but I also didn't feel like there was a lot that was necessary to put in there.
As I've said before, very little excitement or drama in your life since I showed up on the scene.
No, not true.
Well, but kind of true.
But kind of true. Yeah. Your life with you is very boring. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. No, I think the reality is that it was important to catch the reader up to like, well, where am I now? But that was hard to summarize in 14 years in like a chapter or two. I feel like I did it the best way that I could. And I do feel like more of our life now, and I mean, I don't know what you said you weren't going to ask me about the next book, but I genuinely think that the next book will have more of like what, whether it's not going to be a memoir, but whatever it is about, what life is like now.
We already know what the third book is going to be.
Oh, we know what the third. Here's the thing.
Have you talked about the third book?
They do not know about the third book. And the third book could be the second book, but I don't know. It feels like a risk. It feels like a third book. Let's just say. I already know exactly what that book is. Bethany Tran is going to contribute to that book. She has something for that book, but I don't want to give it away because spicy.
Spicy? Oh, yes. Literally spicy. Well, then there's the children's book.
And then there's the fourth book. That'd be fourth book. That could be third.
I don't know. It's getting...
This is getting...
You've committed to a second book is what it sounds like to me.
I've no got pressure. Book one done and three and four. And then maybe it's a series.
/yesterday.
Yeah. /yesterday. We're both in the future and in the past.
Magic.
Meta. But book number two is the one that's a little bit more up in the air.
Is it customary, was I supposed to take you on some sort of vacation or something upon completion of this book? I didn't research
yes.
that or anything.
Yes, you okay. are supposed to take me on a vacation.
How does late July sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah.
Well, what was, other than the death chapter?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the obvious hardest part. What was the hardest thing to write? I'm assuming the death chapter was the hardest thing to write. But I'm guessing there was probably some like cathartic aspect to it.
Yeah, right. I mean, writing the death chapter and the funeral chapter were just like emotionally draining. I remember because that was all I did in the mountains was write those. And I came back and it was like, I should have been so refreshed after this like solo trip to the mountains. And meanwhile, I was just like, no one talked to me. Like, this was horrible, but also very good. I actually think that while those were some of the hardest chapters to write, and I know that they're hard for people to read, I like them. And that's maybe a weird thing to say. The other, I think, just like mentally, logistically hard chapter to write was the What Did You Do in the War Mommy chapter. Because like, how do you summarize my mom's service and contribution to history like in one chapter and like do it justice? So that was hard. And that one also just took an insane amount of research.
Yeah, there were a lot of facts in that.
So much research went into that one. I mean, it's stuff I knew, but it was like, I need to make sure that I'm crossing my T's and dotting my I's.
So I told you I would express the things that I was disappointed about in terms of how I was portrayed in this book.
Yeah.
Everything was fine in terms of like the narrative about me. However, you know, it's all factually true, but the thing that you sort of have to embellish, that's not like, you know, factually reading back through a script, is like text message exchanges
or
conversations. I feel that you did not make me sound nearly sarcastic enough or witty. There was no like mellifluous vocabulary in
mellifluous.
Any of my quotes.
Mm.
It was just,
I don't know. Well, some of the dialogue was exact. The "are you as good as you once was definitely the text you sent me the day after Toby.
I don't remember that, but I'll take your word.
I remember. Okay. I remember. I do wish that one of us could commit a crime so that our text messages could be subpoenaed and then they'd have to contact AT&T just to get our text message logs to be
from 2010
to be shown in open court. And then I could be like on trial for something like some petty crime or I don't know, racketeering. I don't know what racketeering
is. It's a petty crime, but okay.
I don't know what racketeering is. We were watching The Dark Knight and they were talking about racketeering, but actually in this very moment, what is racketeering?
So it's like, usually like mob type of organized crime sort of
I gathered behavior. That much like context clues from The Dark Knight, but I don't actually know what racketeering is.
Like anytime you're using the financial system and banking and all sorts of different fraud, all work, like multiple felonies combined, lots of people doing the felonies together.
That's racketeering?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know.
You don't know what racketeering is?
I mean, that's my best description.
Okay, we're going to Google now.
Let's look it up.
Right, just like racketeering, a type of bat with a round or oval Oh, no, that's a racket.
Just a racket.
Okay. All right. Racketeering is defined by a coordinated effort by multiple people to repeatedly earn a profit, typically by fraud, extortion, bribery, threats, violence, or other illegal means.
Yeah.
Fair.
Okay, I was close enough.
Okay, so if in this hypothetical situation where I am being charged with racketeering, and then they subpoena our text messages from 2010, and then I could just be like, "Hey, hold on a minute, can I get a copy of those? Because I would just really love to read them."
Well, that's I think that's what discovery is in the
process.
They have to turn over all of the evidence.
I'm really going bending over backwards just to read our text messages from 2010. But like it's in those trials that they're always able to subpoena these text messages. How can I, as a just regular old human being, subpoena my own text messages from 2010? If you're listening to this right now and you know how to do that, would you, without racketeering, could you please email me hello@stillbeingmolly.com and you can do subject line racketeering text messages.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it would even be wise for us to continue this discussion. I feel like we have incriminated ourselves for words that we barely even understand. And it's probably time to move on.
Oh my gosh.
Do you have any final thoughts on the book? Put it that way. Anything? Can I get you a cough drop? Like, is there anything?
I still have my cough.
You do still have your cough that you've had since 2010. I'm pretty sure you had a cough when we were talking about racketeering in 2010.
For sure. Wait, we talked about racketeering in 2010?
Probably.
But
anything that you would like to lay to rest that you can say now that the book is out that you couldn't say before? I mean, it's not a leading question. I don't know if that thing exists.
I don't think that thing exists. I don't think it exists.
Okay.
But I will say that this is my, I'm just going to say it right now, that like, if you're listening to this, you should go buy a copy now.
It's good. It's a good book.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
And here's the thing too, is like, and I realize that like the majority of my, I don't want to say audience, that's not right, is female, but there's actually, I actually find it very funny and adorable that the majority of the husbands in our life group listen to my podcast. Not that the wives don't, but I'd say they're not as dedicated listeners as my friends' husbands. I don't know what that means.
Hands off, boys. She's mine.
but the feedback I've gotten from men who have read my book is very encouraging, because it's not that I don't want women to read it. I do. But I know it is going to be much easier for me to market a book to women than it is to men. This is actually really interesting, and I don't know all the psychology in and out of this, but that women are just traditionally, historically, like many, 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 many times more likely to feel comfortable picking up a book, obviously written by a man, than a man is comfortable picking up a book written by a woman. So like, cover matters. So I really wanted, I wanted a great cover, but I wanted like a neutral cover that a man wouldn't be like, I didn't want a pink cover. That was like very, and my first cover draft was pink.
Well, interestingly, this was the first book written by a woman that I've ever read.
Not true.
Yeah, it was the cover that drew me in.
It was. Yeah. But yeah, everybody should go read it, and then you should tell other people to read it. And go buy it if you can, like in person in a store, like in a Barnes & Noble or a local bookstore. That's great.
They still have those.
They do. Huh. They do. They do. And it's great to buy a book from those people.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on your show. And I feel like I need to go talk to my attorney. I haven't talked to him in close to a year. So,
do you have an attorney?
Well, yeah, I have an attorney.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's got an attorney.
Did some racketeering in my day, if you know what I mean.
That's a story that'll get told someday.
Yeah.
That is...
And looks like we're out of time.
Book
but,
two, everyone, yeah, we'll as two. To why John Stillman has an attorney. Yeah,
a couple of them. Yeah.
For racketeering and other pretty crimes. That was for Dan.
That was for Dan. Did she mean to say pretty crimes?
I did. Yeah. Everybody, this has really gotten out of control. Oh, you said that you were going to say something about the lighting.
Oh, yeah. The lights are on in here. I'd noticed that right before we were about to record.
Yes.
Why are the lights on? Because the lights were out and we changed the bulbs and the lights were still out.
All right. So here's the thing.
The breaker was not flipped?
No, the breaker was not. Okay. So here's the thing. Is this house that we love very much was built in the 80s. And so some of the like wiring switches, do they make sense?
Not a lot.
Not a lot of sense. A lot of the rooms, the wiring and switching doesn't make sense. And then my office clearly at one point
was part of the porch. Had to be.
It was part of the porch. Clearly they just like built this little room on. Not really sure why or when. So in any event.
By the way, they called this the gym.
They did call this the gym.
In the real estate listing, this was the gym.
I would say
there's room for a treadmill. Perhaps,
a treadmill.
And 2 30-pound dumbbells.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the room is 11 feet long by 7 feet wide. So it's not big at all, which is great for my little office. In any event, the wiring in here is weird. And like, there's weird things. Like if you flip a GFCI breaker in the bathroom on the other side of the house, it also turns off the power in this room. It doesn't make any sense. Well, there's like a old 80s fan in the middle of the room that has basically no light. And then there's two like recessed lights above me. And so that's what I have to use in order to, you know, have light in my office. and they were not working, and it was driving me crazy. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I was flipping the switch, yada, yada, yada. I make him come in, help me change some light bulbs. And then tonight, because I thought we were going to have to record in the dark, I was trying to figure it out. And then I found these other switches. We've lived here 3 years on the other side by another door. And I was like, huh. And I knew one controlled an outside light. And as soon as I flipped the other one, these lights came on. And I felt very stupid because I have been sitting in the dark in this office for like...
Not a day.
No, like a month. Yeah. And I was about to call an electrician, and that would have... Cousin Hal would have really been embarrassed.
Hal would have, you would have been embarrassed, and Hal would have... Well, Hal might have been embarrassed.
Hal would have been embarrassed for me. Yeah. Should we tell the story of why I'm calling him Cousin Hal?
No. We'll save that for the second book, too.
Cousin Hal, our electrician, is John's long-lost third cousin, fourth removed, or something.
I don't think you know how cousins work, but...
I don't. No. In any event, thanks for hosting my show for a bit.
It's great. Good to see you.
Well... Everybody, thank you so much for listening. And thanks to the team at Third Wheel Media for helping to produce the show. And thank you for listening. And I would love for you to share this show with a friend. And I would love for you to subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're looking at. If you're watching this on YouTube. Yes, we are on the YouTubes these days. I've really upgraded. And you can subscribe, follow, leave a review. Go get the book and share it. You can tag me. I'm at Still Being Molly or at Can I Laugh Pod, wherever you get your social medias. And I hope something this week makes you laugh till you cry.
And thanks, Millard Fillmore.
See you next week.